We're talking about Florida State football today. I've got Wayne McCahey and Tom Park. They're going to give us their insight. This is a rebroadcast of an earlier conversation. Gerald Inslee will talk with us about the 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee bus boycott. And in keeping with our focus on FSU football, Tim Linnefeld, from a conversation we had a little while back, I think you're going to enjoy this, so stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
Welcome again, my friend, to this here fine radio show, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, right here in Tallahassee, Florida. Spanning the globe, we are. Moose Magnificat is a streaming radio station with listeners around the world. We know that, without exaggeration, worldwide. I mean, you know. Last count, we were looking at just under 150,000 listeners. In total, so that's kind of cool. And here we have this weekly edition of Tallahassee Talks. If you're listening to me on Saturday, well, then you're either on Moose or you're listening to us at 93.3 FM Real Talk over there in the west side of town, licensed out of Gretna. Tom Jopling and his fine crew doing a good job for us. And I will say this on this Saturday, that we are now just, 3 days from the final decision, at least we hope it's the final decision. There's some debate as to whether there a winner will be declared on the evening of November 3rd, adding to the drama. Like, we just needed more, didn't we? Oh, man. So, good news, as of the 4th, you know, all of the political ads will have ceased, and your mailbox will not be full of cardboard again. And most of the races locally haven't been too contentious, I don't think. But isn't it interesting that even in our tiny little town of Tallahassee, you know, we got progressives on one side and traditionalists over here, and you got conservatives and liberals. Wow. You know, I think we have a rather nice cross-representation of what's going on nationally. And, of course, if you're like me, I don't know that you would want to be like me, but I don't tend to follow people or parties. I'm a lot more interested in principle. And it happens that when you look at some of the things that people have talked about, things that are of concern, like the Children's Services Council proposed, the Wilani Plantation decisions related to the use of monies and such, and these are, you know, close to home, near and dear to the hearts of all of us who are locals. Well, it happens that we tend to want to align ourselves with a given group or a certain particular person who advances our position. I mean, that's kind of how it works, right? But oftentimes you find yourself, at least I do, again, if you're like me, where the principles involved sort of meander. You know, so when I look in particularly one party or another, and I look at how that party addresses the principle at hand, right? So this business of humanity, what does it mean to be human? And I mentioned this to you last week. Stop and ask yourself, when does life begin? So for me, that's not a partisan question. It's a question of principle. And if I ask, well, what constitutes being a human being, like those of us who identify with humanity as such, beginning at conception, well, then it tends to point you in that direction. You know, you find yourself following after those people who espouse that particular principle. But isn't it interesting, too, that when we find ourselves listening to leadership or those who are asking for our vote, they will try to identify with leaders from our past, you know, so whether it's John Kennedy or Ronald Reagan, even Eisenhauer, probably most notably and of late, Abraham Lincoln. So it turns out that it's not a new thing at all for a candidate, a president especially, to want to kind of pull Honest Abe to his or her side of the conversation, the discussion, we'll say. Good example, Herbert Hoover 50 years ago was campaigning for re-election. And this was, of course, in the midst of the Great Depression. He took special care to associate himself with Abraham Lincoln. And by the way, so did his opponent, Franklin Roosevelt. And his comment was, a few years prior to that, he says, I think it is time for us Democrats to claim Lincoln as one of our own. So late in the campaign, both men came to speak in Springfield and both paid ceremonial visits to the Lincoln tomb. In the 1930s, the phrase getting right with Lincoln had become an almost universal custom among public figures. So it's like asking, is Jesus on the side of the Republicans or the Democrats? And both sides want to claim Jesus as their own. Well, not that Lincoln had been deified at that point, but certainly for us nationally then, he had this sort of bigger than life, heroic position in the minds of Americans, right? Saved the unions, freed the slaves. But by the way, not only was this true for Republicans and Democrats, socialists and communists and prohibitionists, they were all clamoring to identify with Lincoln. Business execs, labor leaders, black Americans, and members of the Klan. Can you imagine? They all seem to want him on their side. And yet, here and there, there were a few voices of dissent. And so in 1932, there was this Leon Garnier Tyler, who was son of President Tyler, John Tyler. He says, in a long personal war upon this heroic image of Lincoln, he says, I think he was a bad man. And Tyler wrote, a man who forced the country into an unnecessary war and conducted it with great inhumanity. Yeah. So you don't hear that often these days, do you? That Lincoln was, in fact, vilified, and certainly among Southerners. The Southern indictment of Lincoln, you know, usually began with the assertion that he had made war unavoidable. But nonetheless, he finds himself pursuing this war that ultimately ended in the surrender of the Confederacy. And after that, then he is recognized as the one who saved the Union. But it was not among those who had suffered that loss of great value. It was, in fact, for them, another 100 years before that kind of heroism would be recognized. And in fact, you'll find people in this part of the world who continue to find President Lincoln not one of their faves. All to say that, in fact, with the establishment of an identification with Abraham Lincoln, you have to step back a bit and you have to consider how over time that personality is adjusted, is fashioned to fit the discourse of the moment.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Tim Lenefelt is a celebrated sports writer, Seminoles.com. Tim, we are delighted to have you with us. Tim Lenefelt, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so pleased to be here.
Florida State football, what's the first thing that comes to mind after you think of Coach Mike Norvell?
Wow, like a word association?
Yeah, kind of thing, yeah.
Refreshed. I feel as somebody near the program or in its orbit, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
It just feels so refreshing. I don't think it's talking out of school to say that certainly by the middle of last season and so on, the results were one thing and everybody knows kind of the way that it went, but it was just such like, man, nobody was having a good time. You know what I mean?
Backstage,
like it was hard. You know,
the stuff.
Yeah, and the games weren't going well, and you remember the optimism of 2 years ago, or whatever it was, yeah. And you really wanted it to work out, and it just was obvious that it wasn't, and it probably wasn't going to. And so, and in those types of situations, I would say, the one I kind of circle was the Wake Forest game that Florida State lost, and it was cold and it was rainy and. You just sort of look, and it's like, man, where is this thing going to go?
Yeah.
And so the idea, certainly wasn't on my radar that, 3 months later, 4 months later, the feel and the tone could be so different and have such a 180 kind of thing. Mm. It really is pretty remarkable, and I think it's a credit to two things. Well, first and foremost, it's a huge credit to Mike Norvell, who is to me just a breath of fresh air, and he's fun to be around, and he's obviously has quite a roadmap for where he wants to take this thing. But in my opinion, it's a credit to Florida State and the administration there for recognizing where they were, in mid October or early November, and saying, let's go ahead and make
sure.
A decision. It was a hard decision to make.
Sure,
In
fact, your perspective for me is vital to a better understanding of Florida State football, particularly Florida State athletics at large. You were looking back at what we've come through, and I think that enough has been said about that. But looking forward, you point to this demarcation where all of a sudden the lights come back on. There's a different mentality. McGahee writes about the manner in which his offensive coordinator has the same point of view, that these two guys are on that same page.
No, yeah, and give credit to Wayne. He's definitely right about that, and he's a. But just to follow up on your previous point, he's a great reporter, and he's connected. So, I'm glad to be included in that discussion. But he's right. We kind of maybe take it for granted because it seems so obvious, right? Like, so Mike Norvell is here, and he brings in an offense coordinator, a guy named Kenny Dillingham, who he's worked with before. They worked together at Memphis, and then Kenny got, I'm sure Wayne told you this, got a great opportunity at Auburn, went there for a year. How can you say no to Auburn? Okay. Yep. Well, a year later, Mike Norvell's at Florida State, and you got an opportunity to get the band back together. Now, this again, this sounds so, you know, obvious, for lack of
maybe
a better word.
Maybe common sense.
For sure.
Thing.
But so now you got two guys who Kenny Dillingham, he knows Mike Norvell's offense. He knows what he likes to do. He knows, okay, third and three, second quarter, we're up by a touchdown. What's Mike going to want to do? You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, they're in sync. They're in lockstep. And those are the kind of things, you know, in the heat of a game with a play clock that's winding down and whatever else, you don't have time to talk about that kind of stuff or go back and forth, and you can, you know, work it out in meetings, but there's no substitute just for knowing it. You know what I mean? And that's something that, quite frankly, was missing at Florida State these last couple of years.
It's funny to you say that, because there were so many of those delay of game penalties.
And so then, you know, you have that, and then you're behind the chains, and then it's first and 15 or second 15, whatever. And the whole thing.
And you that know, changes everything.
More often than not, the drive's not going anywhere.
Nah.
So it's just, it was, to me, it was a program looking at it, and I think the results bear this out, is that there it was so not. Inefficient, you know what I mean? It was just, it was, even when they, when things went well, man, it just felt like you really had to work hard to make it happen. And it was just, you know, sort of a struggle. And so I think the idea that, I mean, look, it extends beyond Kenny Dillingham, the offensive coordinator. I mean, just about every single person on this staff has a connection to Mike Norvell, or they worked together, or they worked, you know, with somebody, you know, there's one degree of separation or whatever the case may be. You know, so he knows these guys, he knows what they're about, they know what he's about. And clearly they're on board with his vision and what he wants, because, one, he wouldn't have brought him here if they weren't. And, two, I don't think, you know, you're talking about, to use Coach Dillingham again as an example, that dude's at Auburn. If he didn't want to work with Mike Norvell, he's already got a great job at a big-time program. But if you know this guy, you know his vision, you know what he's about, I'm going to leave Auburn and go to Florida State, because that's how much I believe in this
guy. So that
guy.
Says a lot
that's
about.
That's a huge endorsement to me. Yeah.
What other observations, if I were to ask you, you know, 1, 2, 3, you look forward to this coming season, what gets you most excited? Is it the quarterback situation? Is it the offensive line? Is it the defensive coaching? I mean, where do you point and say, ah, that is huge. That is a major contribution.
Well, not to belabor the point, but I'm really excited about this coaching staff. I think they're really good. I think they're talented guys. They're well regarded. You know, talking. I don't know a ton of coaches across the country, but I know a few people connected around in different programs, and everybody, just about everybody that's come through here is really well regarded. I mean, coaches, you know, they talk to each other. They're kind of, I don't know if gossips is the word, but you know,
there's a league.
Reputations travel. You know, they all know each other, and just about everybody that Florida State has brought in here is extremely well regarded. I love the defensive coordinator Adam Fuller in that. You know, he talk about a guy who came up from humble beginnings in the coaching circuit. He was coaching for 15 years before he got his first Division I job, and he's coaching at small schools in near Boston. You know, Division III schools with that were enrollment of like 4,000, 5,000, and doing good work there with. I mean, certainly compared to what he has now, no resources.
Wow.
So you talk about a guy who knows how to make the most of what he's got. Give him something. And now what can he do to maximize that? You know, to me, that's really exciting. I want to see the program, and I think they're going to be sharp, efficient, well-coached. You know, one of the things, I mean, I probably said this to you a year or two ago, one of the things that always stood out to me about Florida State these last couple of years, in the games that they would lose, particularly against, you know, the Clemsons or Miamis or Floridas, teams that, you know, maybe they were underdogs, is that you never felt like they gave themselves their best chance to win. Even in a loss, you know, like you see it all the time. Okay, you lose the game, but you did everything you could, and you just didn't have it that day, or maybe your roster's not as good as that one, and you're building toward that, but you gave yourself your best effort, and it just didn't work out. You didn't see that with these guys. Even when they lost, you know, there were the penalties, and there were the miscommunications, and there were, you know, the turnovers, and whatever else, and it's just, you never felt like you actually saw what the team was fully capable of. And my thought now is estimation is that they have a staff in place that's capable of maximizing what they have, and it's been so long since we've seen that. I'm really looking forward to it.
Talking to Tim Linnefelt, an expanded edition of the Linnefelt Sports Report here at Tallahassee Talks. We're going to keep him around for the second hour. Tim, can you hang out with us?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back with more Tim Linnefelt in the second hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were gonna do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just gonna tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it, lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back. We are privileged to have with us Gerald Inslee, who, for his contributions to our understanding and even our education, sometimes our amusement, has been famous for his work with the Tallahassee Democrat over these many years. It seems as though just about the time he's ready to leave the room, they keep dragging him back in there. He and Bill Cotterill, apparently, you know, you just can't let these guys go. But let's welcome Gerald Inslee to the show. How are you, sir?
Doing fine, Brian. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk.
You're looking good.
Thank you.
Your work with the newspaper and for those many years that you were involved really began, if I'm not mistaken, as a sports reporter in the Carolinas.
I started here as a sports writer with the Tallahassee Democrat. I was a sports writer for the first eight plus years, although I continued to write a sports column for another five or six, even after I went to the news side.
Yeah.
But I started as a sports writer.
And then, you were even a part of the student publication,
yes,
too.
Yes, I was a sports editor of the Florida Flambeau, the independent newspaper at FSU.
Look at that. Yeah. So you've watched this town unfold and grow and discover itself. I'm fond of saying that to me, Tallahassee is a teenage girl who has arrived at that point in life when she's in her adolescence, beginning to question a lot of her own history and looking at, is this who I really am? So right, there's kind of awakening going on.
There's certainly an awakening going on.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe this is a segue into what we're going to talk about, but I say all the time that the biggest change from when I came in 1969 to today is the improvement in race relations. And all that started 13 years before I came with the Tallahassee bus boycott in 1956.
In fact.
But this was a very old South town. And you talk about the awakening and the changes, and there's many of those. Many of them have nothing to do with race. But it is the growth and the improvement of race relations that has been the most significant advance in this town.
And in fact, this bus boycott that we're talking about, this is the 60th anniversary celebration of, recognition of the 1956 bus boycott.
Right.
And that happened because we had these two FAMU students. Let's see if I can get these names correctly. You say them.
Kerry Patterson.
Yeah.
And Wilhelmina Jakes.
Wilhelmina Jakes. There we go.
They were two FAMU students.
Yeah.
In fact, they lived together in a rooming house over on Jennings Street, very near the AMU campus.
Yeah.
And on May 26, 1956, the two of them went to board the bus at what is now FAMU Way and Adams Street. And they immediately sat down on a bench seat right behind the driver where a white woman was also sitting. The driver immediately said, "You have to move." They said they weren't. He said, "You have to move." They said, "Well, give us our dimes back." He refused to give them their dimes back. I mean, it was a dime fare in those days. Apparently, having put it in the machine or whatever they had in those days, he felt he could not return those dimes. So when they refused to move without their dimes, he drove them to the police station, and had them arrested. And that kicked off the boycott. I mean, many things followed. The next night, a fiery cross was burned in the yard of the home where the two girls were staying. That was on a Sunday night. Then on Monday morning, an infuriated student body led by student government president Brodus Hartley They called a meeting at Lee Hall. At those days, FAMU had only something like 2,200 students. Mm. But anyway, most of the 2,200 students arrived at Lee Hall, and Hartley called for a boycott of the buses, thinking that that would be a good protest back. I don't know. I don't think he was thinking of the historical context, which was that, you know, it already happened in Baton Rouge and happened in Montgomery.
Right, right.
But maybe it was. But mainly he was reacting to the agency, if you will, that had denied two FAMU students their human rights.
Right, yeah. In fact, with the work that had already been done, right, mm-hmm. and this occurrence, you mentioned Montgomery, Rosa Parks and all, do you think there was for them a bit of inspiration?
Possibly.
Okay.
I've got to say, I mean, I don't know how much of the story you want me to tell, but
as much as you can.
Okay. Well, the students started the boycott, and that was on a Monday in late May. There was only 1 week left in the term, in a time when students went away at summer. Nowadays, you know, you've got to take at least one or two summer semesters to graduate. And so the town doesn't empty out like it did in the old days. The old days, colleges closed, they were empty. Yeah. Okay, so in this case, the students are there for 1 week, and presumably they didn't ride the bus much for that 1 week. But then they were gone. So the boycott would have died had it been left up to the students, not because they wanted to, but because they just weren't there. They were gone.
Yeah.
What happened was on that Tuesday after the Monday decision by students was that a group of black pastors and businessmen gathered and formed the Inter-Civic Council. And it was this group.
And that was Reverend Steele.
That was he was elected president. But it was that group led by Reverend Steele that really maintained, propelled, and made the boycott happen. And
do you think they, as a group, recognized the historic significance of what they were doing?
I think they possibly recognized the historic significance. To me, the bigger thing is the courage it took. These were middle-aged, middle-class people dependent on the kindness of white people. Most of them, Steele and the businessmen, that's why they were able to form this, because they weren't dependent on white people. You had grocer Dan Spies, whose clientele was mostly black. You had the black preachers who were paid mostly by their pastors.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The leaders of the thing were probably thinking of the historic part. The ones that joined them, the maids and laborers who came to support them, who came to drive cars to take people to work, these people had to have a certain amount of courage, because what they were doing was attacking their employers. Yeah. I mean, not specifically, but they ran the risk of being fired and losing their jobs. Yeah. The pastors didn't necessarily, but those who participated in the boycott ran the risk of infuriating the white people for whom they depended on for their economy. Yeah. So I think later on, the Tallahassee Civil Rights Movement will be guided by students, mostly FAMU students, Patricia Stevens Due, and all those. But students faced no real consequences for their lives other than being arrested or being beaten or
something like that.
For these middle-aged people, they were risking their entire families and their economies to take this first step, because Tallahassee has not had that first step.
Interestingly, too, you bring this out in the article that the import of their action was especially pointed because the vast majority of those who rode the bus
were black. Right.
And so for this black community to say, we're out,
right,
that meant that this private company, which in those days it was, right?
City Strange, it was private at that time, right.
They just lost the majority of their customer base. So there was inherently then an economic pressure.
Sure.
So the people owning the bus company had to say, whoops, okay, maybe we're going to have to rethink this.
And it indeed was the bus company that was willing to capitulate sooner than the city commission was. The bus company the bus company agreed to one of the three demands of the protesters, which was to hire black drivers. They did that fairly soon in the process. And the bus company was willing to let them ride anywhere they wanted, except the city commission wouldn't. The city commission passed an ordinance for a while, and it was called assigned seating. And that was, the bus driver was supposed to assign the passengers to a seat based on weight and height. I mean, like, somehow four 200-pound people on one side of the bus was your way down or something like that. So it was the city commission that fought harder than city transits because, as you note, it was an economic thing. They couldn't afford to keep losing money. They were willing to revisit, if you will, the idea of who sat where and who drove the buses. So, it was an economic thing for them. But for the city commission, this was the first salvo in, we're going to change the way things have been. And that's what they feared. They feared that the city commission felt, if we give in on this, how much longer before they want to go to the same schools? How much longer before they start marrying our women?
So in that way, it was a seminal event.
Yes.
Folks, we're talking with Gerald Ensley. We are in recognition of the 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee bus boycott. And you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
In 1956, the Tallahassee bus boycott drew a line in the sand when it came to race relations and civil rights, especially as it was focused on the use of what was then a privately owned bus company. Gerald Ensley is with us, and Gerald, we've talked a little bit about some of the particulars, some of the history as to how this came about. When you look forward, and you said this in your opening remarks with us, the number of years that have passed, even since your arrival in Tallahassee, you said that the changes we've made in race relations are probably the most significant in our time. And we're going to have Kenneth Pratt with us in the second hour to talk even more in more greater detail then about where we are now. We've made progress.
Because your question was, will it go away? And apparently it won't go away with a certain segment of the economy, for one thing.
And so then what is required of us who are not of that mind? How do we better, if we can't eliminate it, how do we control it?
I hope it's by the continued good example of good people doing the right things that make it harder and harder for bad people to do the wrong things, and that even if it's in their head, they have less and less opportunity to do anything about it. And you obviously you've got to give some credit to the passage of time. There are people now who are in the good segment. Let's say 80% of the white population is in the good segment. I would say 50 years ago, maybe only 20%.
Well, and to your point, when we look around the country and look at the vast number of communities, including our own, we don't see daily or even on a consistent basis of some kind shootings of young black men.
Right.
It's happened in a few communities.
Right.
So it almost underscores your point there that you're going to have these elements of racism showing up.
Right.
And when we look at that, what went on in Charlotte was a sort of mix of violence that often you would just associate with rioting. And then you had those who seemed to be a lot more concerned about the protest than making their point that beyond the reactionary aspects, we've got a much larger issue at stake.
Right.
Is that a fair assessment, you think? I mean,
are you saying that that most of the population wants peace and goodness on earth?
I think so.
I'd like to hope so.
And I'm saying
it's the reason why I hope Hillary's going to be elected.
Well, and I think that the people who you mentioned, the 15 young black men who were put up there and said these are black teenagers, does it help their cause, whether it's Black Lives Matter or our cause, to say, can't we all get along,
right,
when we have people who are looting and rioting and burning and such? That seems to me to reinforce all of that. See people going, aha, see, there you go.
Yeah,
and I think it overshadows then what is really the fact.
Right.
And
that is that we've got to, I don't think that any thinking person condones the looting and rioting. They may understand it as an expression of anger, but it's mostly an expression of anger.
But it becomes fuel for this, we'll call it, minority position.
Yes, yeah.
That says, see, that's why we can't trust Black people.
Exactly. Okay. It is.
Yeah. Okay.
But there is also there's an inherent distrust that I don't, you know, that's the thing that we got to keep eating away at. In elementary school, if a white kid cuts the fool, acts up, tells jokes, teacher thinks he's a high-spirited, he's a nice kid. A black kid does the same thing. He goes to the principal's office. Mm-hmm. There is still a fear among certain people that Black people are somehow more dangerous than white people. Mm-hmm. That's some sort of human reaction that I'm not sure what motivates that. You know, people always say, oh, we all want to be better than somebody. I don't know that I've ever woke up one morning and said, boy, I hope I'm better than so-and-so. Mm-hmm. But perhaps there is, mm-hmm. you know. And so there's still a segment of people that look at Black people differently. And that's the thing you hope you overcome by good examples, by intolerance of misbehavior.
And in the case of the Tallahassee bus boycott, mm-hmm. which we are then acknowledging right. and recognizing,
right.
it sometimes comes about because collectively Blacks and whites and Asians
right.
and Hispanics, we all come together and say, this is the way we want to live.
I think many white people in 1956 came to realize, why are we arguing about where they sit on the bus? You know, I mean, they realized that this is not, I mean, that while they may not have accepted Blacks as equal, while they may not have voted for them for the city commission, they could not justify being too hardcore about the idea of giving them
right.
the human dignity right. of sitting wherever they want on the bus.
Well, and interestingly, you mentioned that the next day, here were these burning crosses.
Right.
in the front yards of.
But that's been.
But think about what that impact yeah. would have had with white people
right.
who say, well, that's not me.
Malcolm Johnson,
that's not what I believe.
Yeah, the legendary editor of the Tallahassee Democrat, often accused of not being a heavy promoter of integration, and he wasn't. But he immediately seized on that, said, this is not the way we want to behave as a community. Yeah. You may disagree with the bus boycott, or you may disagree with these two girls, because
right,
it happened
right,
that quick.
Right.
You may disagree with these two girls choosing not to move, but we don't want to be a place where we could
right.
encourage violence.
Incredulous as it may seem, and as much as the Klan has not had the kind of visibility that it had at one
yeah.
time, I'm sure that it's still alive and well.
That's part of the positive,
yeah.
slow movement I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, talking about as whites came to realize that the bus boycott or that the riding on the buses isn't something we should be enforcing strict segregation on. From 1963 to 1968, Tallahassee, and I may be off on one of the years, but for 3, 4, 5 summers, Tallahassee pools were closed down each summer rather than allow Black kids to swim in the same pools with white kids. We had three public pools. One of them was in the Black section. The other two, Levy Park and Myers Park, were for whites only. But protesters led by Patricia Stevens Dew, who I mentioned, would bring Black kids to the city pools and try to swim. That was stopped. So by the next year, they just closed pools. They just did not open the pools at all in the summer. And eventually, white people said, "Now wait a second, what? You know, maybe we're not going to consider them our equals. Maybe we're not going to elect them to office. But what can be wrong with their swimming in a pool, especially as hot as it is? Everybody instinctively knew Tallahassee's hot in the summer. How can you deny kids the right to swim in a pool?" And again, Malcolm Johnson sort of led the way on that. He said, this is enough. This is stupid. I mean, the city commission had voted three, four times to close the pool. And he just started chiding them and saying, this is ridiculous. This is not where we make our stand about race.
Yeah. And that stand is...
And so progressively...
There's onward, been, yeah.
Onward. Every decision yeah. that happens like that makes a new generation not use those sort of tactics and not feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be shocked. Nobody thinks twice about jumping into a pool that's already got black kids in it.
There are a lot of those things that are archaic.
Right.
And when they're
they become archaic.
Yeah, yes. Brought to our attention now, especially among those who didn't live through that time,
right.
They're astounded. It's just like another planet.
Right.
You can see it. Folks, so unfortunately, we don't get to have more time with this dear man. Gerald Inslee, our guest this morning, as we recognize this 60th anniversary of the Tallahassee bus boycott back in 1956. I was a year old, by the way.
I was four.
So for those of you who may be a bit older than Gerald and I, you may were witness to all of this. God bless you. And thank you for being a part of this broadcast today. Look forward to having Gerald back on another occasion. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Folks, stay with me. I've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic. You know, something clever. But that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. On this Saturday before the national election, November 3rd, this coming Tuesday, if you haven't voted already, I trust that you will certainly take every opportunity to get to the polls. If you want to wait until Tuesday, it's certainly your right. There may be some lines at that point, so a lot of folks are advising you to vote early so you're not stuck in line for an extended period of time. But in any case, we think we'll know as of Wednesday morning. We hope we'll know where we are headed. And with that, we will continue on in our own American way. And in fact, while you are certain concerned for the country, regardless of your particular affiliation, your political leanings, one thing is true, that we have, in fact, that in common, that we care for the future of this nation. And what you consider valuable to the life and health of this country, you may find a lot of folks agreeing with you. And those who disagree, well, they're equally afforded the opportunity then to continue to campaign, even after the election, for those things they consider most vital to this American experiment, as we say. So it is with our concerns here. We look at conversations we've had over the last several years. And in our town, so much of the time we are thinking about how we care for kids and elderly, how we provide services for those that are disadvantaged. So famously, we talk here about the folks at Second Harvest and our Tallahassee Food Challenge promotion. And now as we enter into this time of year with Christmas approaching, it's time for us to talk more decidedly about helping Christmas Connection. And so our Help Christmas Connection is ready to launch here next week. And we encourage all of you to think in terms of how you can contribute. And we'll have more detail for you as we go forward. But it's only a few weeks out. And with that, the good folks at Christmas Connection take those donations, contributions of any kind, and make sure that those families, and there's anywhere from 800 to 1,000 families that they care for throughout the year, but it's at this time of year that they do the best they can to bring a bit more of Christmas a little closer to kids, especially kids and teenagers that rely on you and I. So that's our campaign again coming up, Help Christmas Connection. You can find out more at helpchristmasconnection.com. We're also available to you on Facebook with our Facebook page. Well, and can't talk about Florida State football without thinking about similar sorts of frustrations. So if you're weary of the political entanglements and all that's been going on for better than a year, let's talk about Florida State football and all that we've gone through in the last 3 or 4 years in that way. Man, not a whole lot of places for you to rest your head, are there? But I thought you'd enjoy hearing from Wayne McGahey. You know, he's been a sports writer for the Tallahassee Democrat for a long time. Recently resigned his position, publicly stated, for personal reasons. And so we trust that Wayne's reasons are his and wish him well. He's done a great job over there at the newspaper and seemed to leave on very good terms with all of his associates and the execs there at the newspaper. So we'll try to keep an eye on him, see where he's headed. And we had Tom Park sit down with him as we talked about Florida State football here some months ago. This was really prior to the season, and we had an opportunity back in January to talk at length about what we thought would happen. Now, at that point, things were just then starting to percolate regarding the coronavirus, and certainly we didn't see the kind of magnitude that would bring, of challenge that would bring to, of course, not just football, but to the entire country on every level. I mean, all of our systems, economic and social, educational, they've all been tasked. Medical, it has certainly not been in our lifetime close to anything else. Nothing else, I should say, has been close in its magnitude. And of course, with that, you know, when Florida State is just trying to get itself back on the field with some sense of direction and hope and self-respect, you know, here comes a shutdown that then impedes them trying to work with this new coach, Mike Norvell, and yeah. So if you're not into what's going on with Florida State football, well, trust me when I say, and it parallels so many other very frustrating aspects of this year, but I want to emphasize this again, and I try to do so consistently with you, that there is so much more to be accomplished beyond whatever we've lost. Does that make sense? So no matter how devastating it may seem, and I mean, we can point to all kinds of events in our history as a nation, but even in this community. You know, think about what it's taking for the people west of us over there in the Bay County area, Mariana, right? It's astounding, the kind of resolve that it requires. But there's a kind of collective resolve when we look to one another for encouragement, and we find ourselves discussing the best possible solutions to these problems. Well, you can be assured that that's what's really going on with Florida State. And if you've not tuned in, if you've not been watching, I think Mike Norvell is doing a good job. And I think that is a lot to say considering all that has come at him. You know, not the least of which might be his own personal contraction of, you know, the coronavirus. So this guy's had a whole snootful of stuff to have to deal with, and yet to have been able to take the field and have at least one or two wins under his belt, yeah, I think there's a more to be said about the character of the man and the resolve of these young players who themselves have decided we're not where we want to be, we're not where we were, but we are heading in a direction that says this is where we're going. This is the team that we're going to be. We should take heart, because regardless of political perspective and regardless of election outcomes, let's agree, there is more good up ahead.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Tim Lenefeld is here with an expanded edition of the Tim Lenefeld Sports Report, Tallahassee Talks. Let's try to figure out what's going on with Florida State football. Sure. We had an opportunity in the first hour to get into some of the coaching staff issues. It has been said that in the last couple of years, we just haven't had the quarterback that could really run this offense. We had Cam Akers, but, you know, Cam's gone. So now what? And if you look at what they were able to do recently, there was a player who was a transfer from Arizona.
He's a recruit from Arizona.
Recruit.
And fun fact, I looked this up the day that he signed. Chuba Purdy is his name, which is a heck of a name. And I believe he – I can't remember what the exact number. He's, I think, the third football player at Florida State from the state of Arizona.
Interesting.
Ever. So,
interesting factoid.
These are the things that are interesting to me.
Yeah, right. Well, this is why you have no life, because you just sit around and think about this stuff.
That's truer than you think.
But then we get to hear about it, so that's good.
So anyway, talking about the quarterbacks, I'm with you on that. I think the biggest question that Florida State Mike Norvell is going to have at that position is, you know, how does James Blackman fit what you want to do offensively? He's been here a long time, obviously, and this will be his redshirt junior season coming up.
Now, is that a question mark as to who will be the start, or is that already decided?
Well, no, I don't think anything's decided at this point. I still think they're evaluating, you know, and it'll probably be through spring before they have a really good idea of what they have. But I think, you know, you're looking at, you know, you have two guys on the roster right now, and James Blackman and Jordan Travis. You saw both of those guys at the Sun Bowl. And then you have two incoming freshmen coming in, and Chuba Purdy from Arizona, and then Tate Rodemaker. He's right up from right up the road in Valdosta. Two great names, by the way, Chuba Purdy and Tate Rodemaker. And so the question that Mike Norvell and Kenny Dillingham are going to have to answer is, you know, we got these pieces. How do they fit?
How do we play them?
What we want to do.
Yep.
You know, James Blackman is by far your most experienced guy, but you're also in a situation where, I mean, this is going to be his fourth year and fourth offensive coordinator at Florida State. That's remarkable, and it not is. In a good way. You know
that
what I mean?
It's not a good thing.
It's just tough. It's asking a lot of
kid. You know, it's clear that if you'd had an offensive line that could actually
protect
him.
That's part of it as well. Yeah.
Maybe we'd actually get to see the man play the way he's capable of playing.
And but it's kind of a, you know, I don't know if catch 22 is the word, but it's like, you know, yeah, if you're better up front,
yep.
But you are what you are. So what can you do about it? You know what I mean? Like it's the same, you know, across the board. It's, you got to figure out how to go back to the point from last segment is how do you maximize what you have? And so, you know, those guys, I think the big question that we're all going to be following is what do they come up with as the answer to that question? What do they feel is the answer to that question? Because people are really excited about the freshmen, and rightfully so. Those guys are big-time prospects, and, you know, there's a lot of promise. But, you know, are you going to start a true freshman from day one? And knowing that your first game next year is against West Virginia, who is a quality team in Atlanta, it's not at home, you know, that's a big ask for a true freshman if that's what you're going to do. So, you know, they're going to have to kind of see and answer, you know, what's that situation going to look like.
We were talking about the, we'll call it the energy level or the optimism, and it seems to be pervasive when you walk the halls over there at Florida State football.
Yeah.
Word on the street is that their strength coach is a beast. Can you talk about his contribution?
I've not met him yet. His name is Josh Storms, which is, again, we're talking names.
We got all the right names.
Could there be a better name for a strength
this
coach?
This is great. It's like a Marvel movie.
No, I know, right? It's pretty. It really is. But yes, I think that's obviously has been a sore spot for Florida State fans, particularly. I mean, you know, look, that stuff's not hard to see. I mean, it shows up in the fourth quarter of every game, where how your conditioning is, how your strength is, that sort of thing. And, you know, when teams fade in the second half, that's typically what that means, or, you know, a lot of it. And so, again, I haven't met Josh Storms. I know that he's well-regarded. I know, you know, to me, you got to look at it is he was with Mike Norvell at Memphis.
Sure.
And if you believe in Mike Norvell and what he's doing and his ability to evaluate the people working for him, and that's what we're kind of leaning on right now for the staff.
Sure,
then that applies to the strength coach as well. He was obviously happy enough with this guy to bring him to Florida State.
And you know what? Growing strength takes discipline and time.
Well, in football, more than maybe any other sport, it's so important.
And because, it's accelerated.
Yeah,
at this
because
point.
You can be super athletic and super cerebral and know everything, but if the guy lining up from you is
350 pounds,
play in and play out, you're neutralized.
Yep,
you can't do anything with it.
And
so
you talk about that, the endurance, not just the strength at the moment, but how well do you play that out over four quarters?
No, exactly right, and particularly in that fourth quarter. I'll tell you this, the whispers that I've heard and the messaging that's gone out to the players is that the strength program is going to be really, really tough.
Let's say in terms on the field, you know, where do they need the most help? Offensive line, defensive line.
You know what? I think that the offensive line has a chance to be pretty improved this year.
Yeah,
I really do. And I know, you know, people are. If there's any group on the team where people want to say, "Yeah, we'll see," it's that one. But I mean, they've got some talented young pieces, some promising guys coming back, and they got a transfer that's coming in, a fifth year senior who I think, you know, projects to be an improvement over what they've had. So I think that has a chance. To me, I look at it as question marks. And the question, you know, the truth is, I mean, they got question marks in a lot of places. And we talked about the quarterback position, running back without Cam Akers. How's that going to look? You know, the defensive backs, you lose one of your best corners. I think the big questions need to be answered over these next 6 or 8 months: quarterback, offensive line, and running back.
In fact, if these players can get a hold of the same level of enthusiasm and energy, then you've got what is the makings for some dedication, right? Devotion.
Yeah. But you know what? I really liked the line from Mike Norvell, and I think some of his assistant coaches have echoed it or something similar. As they said, you know, I'm not asking you from day one just to blindly trust me. And follow me and know, you know, believe that I know what I'm doing and I'm taking this in the right direction. But what he said, what I will ask you is just to watch me. Give me an opportunity, watch. And he's confident that doing that and that the player seeing what he puts in and the work and the results that he's had, you know, whether it's at other places or that you start to see here, given that the players will all eventually fall in line. Mm. And to me, you know, what else can you ask for? Mm. What else can you reasonably ask for?
Yeah. Tim Linnefeld, everybody, our best source for Seminoles backstage information, right? FSU football at hand, and this new coaching staff being headed up by Coach Mike Norvell. Tim Linnefeld, our good buddy, another expanded edition of the Linnefeld Sports Report, courtesy of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Thank you, Tim.
Oh, thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
We'll be watching you, following you on Twitter.
Thank you.
Folks, stay with me. I've got more coming up right after this.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
There's no question about the fact that when it comes to Tallahassee, you're looking at state government, you're looking at Florida State University, and you're talking about FSU football. So with that in mind, here we are at the beginnings of 2020, and a new coach, a new staff, largely, and we needed to figure out everything that's going on. Well, on good authority, I found out that we've got Wayne McGahey, who is the FSU sports beat writer for the Tallahassee Democrat. He is our guest this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on.
A pleasure, and thanks for making the time, because I know you don't get a whole lot of extra moments to yourself. It's a full-time job, is it not?
It is a full-time job between football and hiring new coaches and the upcoming recruiting season. Then there's basketball, baseball starting. There's not a lot of time, but I happy to take the time to speak with you today.
You have a pack of number two pencils in your pocket at all times. I get it. Yeah. And for that purpose, I think we're fortunate as readers that you are that devoted, that dedicated to the task. I mean, and it is a formidable task. Joining us alongside Wayne is Tom Park. I can tell you that Tom is the co-founder and managing partner from Prescient Capital Ventures. He has a history as an NCAA football coach, taught at West Chester University, and was a Division I-A athletic director at Liberty University in the Big South Conference. Football coach for 15 years, knowledgeable would be an understatement. This is a guy who's just spent his professional life studying athletics and particularly football. So let's welcome Tom Park. How are you, Tom?
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me. It's always a delight.
You are looking fit and ready for 2020, and here's to a great new year. Happy New Year, guys. Mm. We'll dive in here. Tom, when I say Florida State football, Mike Norvell, probably the first thing that comes to mind. All right, new head coach, long anticipated. Do you get the sense that everybody's sort of breathing a sigh of relief, or are they still kind of holding their breath?
You know, I think that there is a sigh of relief. There's also, you know, with the way that everything has gone and you're hiring your second coach in 3 years, there is a little bit of, you know, breath holding. But I think that everything that Coach Norvell has done so far has done a really good job of maybe relieving that from the fan base. He's he's really connected with the fan base. He's put together an excellent football staff. He's put together an excellent support staff. He seems to have a complete plan for what he wants to do. He salvaged Florida State's early recruiting class. He's still got some work to do in that regard. But I think that Coach Norvell has done a pretty fantastic job of endearing himself to the fan base and getting them to buy in. It's going to take time, you know, after the way the last three seasons have gone to get maybe the fan base that kind of, you know, said, oh, well, they're losing now. It's time to not pay attention. Time to get them back. But I do think that there's, you know, he's taken a first step forward in that regard.
You did a fantastic job, I thought, in laying this out for all of us this last Monday, the 6th, in the newspaper. You were going through kind of step by step, position by position, and giving us a sort of thumbnail on each one of these guys. In that article, you talk about some of the coaches referring to Norvell's credibility. This is a guy who's real.
Absolutely. He seems, at least to me, and I've spoken with him a couple times so far, I spoke with him again yesterday, he seems to be a real, genuine person. And you can get that feeling from a guy, but then when you go and talk to the people who have been around him for so long, you know, guys who have coached with him, guys like Kenny Dillingham, and you know, running backs coach David Johnson. You talk to those guys about Norvell, and they believe it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with those guys, just complimenting that, and you can see it in the players when you talk to the players about him. They're all excited about him. He just seems to be a genuine person. He lays it on the line. He talks about just how being being honest in everything is just so important. When he talked about his recruiting class early in December, it was something that really stood out to me. Was that he told his recruits that don't commit to a coach, commit to the school, because your position coach is probably not going to be here in 4 years. Because I want them to get promoted, I want them to move on, I want them to take the next step and get the next job ahead. And that's not something you see from a lot of, you know, from a lot of coaches.
Candor.
But I mean, it's absolutely true. His coaching staff at Memphis, most of them took promotions.
Yeah.
You know, so I was impressed with his honesty, and I think he's a very genuine person.
Interesting, the fluidity of collegiate athletics, especially A1 football. Yeah, it's not what it was. Tom, you've been an observer and a participant in this whole thing for a number of years. Mm-hmm. You sit back and look at what's going on at Florida State. What are your initial observations?
Well, I think a lot of kudos have to go to President Thrasher and AD David Coburn for really making a great selection. I've had 100 people ask me, well, what do you think? And, you know, you look at what the Memphis AD, Laird Veach, said. You know, it's clear that Mike took us to new heights. He did it the right way. If you listen to what Norvell says, he talks about championship thinking.
Indeed.
If you look at the fantastic analysis that Wayne has done on that staff and that Monday article, which is, you know, I've never seen anything done better in my many years of looking at this. Norvell has assembled. Go back to what Bobby Bowden assembled when Bowden was young, when Bowden had energy. We now have an electric personality. Mm-hmm. You know, organizations are galvanized by leaders. We got a leader, okay?
Yeah.
And I have told everybody, I said, you know, I haven't met the man, but I've been around the game for 60-some years.
Right. You got the picture.
I don't need to know a whole lot. I look forward. Maybe I'll shake his hand someday. But honestly, look at how he has put together a staff, the expertise, the breadth, the ability to recruit, the coverage of the country. Now, and I say to the fans, I say to the community, I say to the fans, I say to the boosters, and I say to the leadership, be patient. It takes 5 years to build one of these. It takes 5 years, folks. Yeah. So be patient, because you got the right guy in charge, and he's going to assemble an organization that's going to get it done.
Part of that assembly includes some rather high-profile recruits deciding, hey, we want to be a part of this. We get it. Mm-hmm. And that included this transfer from, University of Arizona?
The quarterback recruit from from Arizona, Chuba Purdy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a four-star recruit, very talented kid, and I was extremely impressed by how Florida State was able to get him in. There were relationships there that had been built. Coach Norvell, Chuba Purdy's brother is Brock Purdy, the starting quarterback at Iowa State.
I got you.
But they're from Arizona, and when Coach Norvell was the offensive coordinator at Arizona State, he took and he recruited Brock Purdy.
I see.
So the relationship had been built there. And then you have Coach Dillingham, they had a relationship as well. He was committed to Louisville, but they got him on campus. They sold him on the need at quarterback, and there is a need at quarterback. They sold him on the vision. They sold him on playing in Norvell's offense, which has been one of the most high-powered offenses in the game the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And they managed to get him in. Florida State had not signed a high school quarterback since the 2017 class. You can't go 2 years without signing a high school quarterback. They brought in a couple quarterback transfers in Alex Hornibrook, who was there for 1 year, and then Jordan Travis, who we all saw how successful he was running the football, but maybe not as much as a thrower. So they needed to bring in a quarterback that they believed could run the offense. They brought in two quarterbacks this cycle, Tate Rodemaker, who they flipped from South Florida. He was also getting interest from schools like Virginia Tech, and then Chuba Purdy. So he came out guns blazing and found himself a couple quarterbacks that he believes can take this program back to where it needs to be. And, I mean, we all know how important the quarterback position is. And, you know, if you don't have that, you don't really have much of an offense, as we found out.
Right, Tom, your point is you be patient, and that 5-year stretch may be the case, but you got to also think, wow, this guy has gotten this much done in such short time. Maybe that won't be as much as 5 years. Maybe we'll see more like a 3-year turnaround.
Yeah, quite respectfully, let me say, let's go 1993 National Championship, Charlie Ward. 1999 National Championship, Chris Winkie. 2013 National Championship, Jameis Winston. Let's see, what is the common denominator here? So he talks about quarterback.
Yep.
1974, head recruiter at Maryland, I signed Mark Mangus, cover Sports Illustrated, 4th in the country. In a couple of years, we go to the Cotton Bowl, almost win the national championship.
We're going to take a quick break here. I've got Tom Park, Wayne McCahey, Tallahassee Democrat. You stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking FSU football. Wayne McCahey and Tom Park, our expert team, our duo of both the history of the game, and the game has changed, hasn't it, Tom?
It's changed a great deal.
Decidedly. I mean, I was watching over the holidays, people bemoaning, you know, where are the good old days when, you know, Florida State football.
Winning football games, it's why major college football programs invest so much in football coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
Because without a winning football program, you can't support the athletic department for the other non-rev sports.
And when that's happening, Tom, you've been inside of those offices. You've walked those hallways. There's a kind of an implosion. You know, things start to get really tense and really dark. And I think about the comments you made. Your head coach and your offensive coordinator have to be on eye to eye. I don't think we had that with the prior coach.
No, Florida State's had – this will be Florida State's fourth different offense that they've run in the last 4 years. Coach Taggart ran his offense in 2018. It didn't really work out. Walt Bell was kind of a little bit of a scapegoat there. He didn't really have very much control of that offense, and he left for UMass and took that head coaching job. They brought in Kendall Briles. There was a little friction there. Not going to lie, there was a little bit of friction there.
Yeah.
And you saw that Kendall, or Coach Briles, the game after Coach Taggart was fired, he was able to open up the playbook a little bit more. Some little things changed.
And everybody goes, where did this quarterback come from? Well, he's been sitting over there.
Yeah.
Taggart didn't want to play him.
So you've got that. But
interesting.
The way that Coach Dillingham is, he studies at, I don't want to say, like you have the church football, but he studies at the altar of Norvell. He was a guy, Coach
Dillingham. He's a disciple.
He is, 100%. He was a high school coach in Arizona when Coach Norvell found him, and the way they found each other was that Coach Norvell invited him to come sit in on meetings.
Interesting.
Any meeting that he wanted to sit in at Arizona State. So Coach Dillingham went in and sat in, I believe, every single meeting. So he brought him in as a graduate assistant, took him with him at Memphis, had him coach the quarterbacks, and then bumped him up.
See, that's what Tom's talking about.
See,
when you look at the legacy that somebody builds over time.
If you read that Monday article that Wayne wrote and that analysis, two-thirds of it is about the staff. And if you read all those backgrounds, all that connectivity, all that chemistry, I mean, I could go on for an hour just by myself talking about that. But a third of that column is about the infrastructure of the personnel side. So let's talk. We talk about quarterbacks. Let's talk about the portal. And you talk about how football has changed as a business. So every mother and father of every son in this country that's playing quarterback is saying, 3 years and I'm in the portal and I'm out to the NFL and I'm making X if I'm a quarterback.
Right.
So you talk about the money in the business, how it's changed the personnel, and how important that personnel side that Wayne analyzed. You could do a whole article on the personnel side and how Norvell builds that out, because in the NFL, that platform is what puts those players, and it's 70% about players, and it's 30% about the quarterback amongst the players, and then you get the right coaches with the chemistry and the leadership and all of that elixir, and all of a sudden you got a winner. And we happen to have a guy, and again, kudos to the leadership, Thrasher and Coburn, they got the right guy.
When you watch
I'll put my name next.
Let's look forward a bit. What should we be paying attention to, I guess, between now and the beginning of the season next fall or this coming fall?
Well, like you mentioned, we want to pay attention to the transfer portal. Florida State has a serious issue on the offensive line, and the only way to get that fixed is with players. They've already brought in one offensive lineman who I expect will probably be the starting right tackle if everything goes correctly for Florida State next year. It's Devontae Taylor from Florida International. Florida State's going to have to hit the transfer portal hard when it comes to offensive linemen. They've got one. They probably need at least one, particularly a left tackle, or two more. They've got some really good interior guards, freshman interior guards, guys that played very well down the stretch as they got used to it. Guys like Dante Lucas and Maurice Smith. But the offensive line is a major issue. And if you can't protect your quarterback, you're not going to win football games. And Florida State's found that out the hard way. If not for Cam Akers being just a phenomenal football player, Florida State would have been in a lot of trouble this year because they wouldn't have been able to run the football. I mean, he broke a ton of tackles. He got hit in the backfield a lot, and he was still able to push forward and get a bunch of yards. So Florida State's going to have to hit the transfer portal. That's something that fans will need to pay attention to. Also, the next month of recruiting, Florida State's still trying to add to its staff, so you've got to pay attention to who Florida State is looking to bring in. There's a serious depth issue at running back with Cam Akers gone, so Florida State's going to have to fix that. They've already brought in one. Actually, they brought in two, but then we get into spring practice, and I'm really anxious to see how Florida State adjusts to this offense because they've had to continually adjust the last 4 years. They went from slow as all get out pro-style offense under Jimbo Fisher to trying to run fast, trying to get spread out wide under Willie Taggart, to trying to go even more fast but trying to do a bunch of different things under Kendall Briles. And now they're going back to a pro-style offense that still wants to go fast. So it'll be interesting to see how this roster adjusts again to a brand new offense, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. But I'm also looking forward to seeing how Florida State's defense, because this was an issue for me, is that I had no idea what Florida State's defense was doing last year, and I don't think the defensive coaches did either, because that wasn't Harlan Barnett's defense. That wasn't the defense that he was brought in to run. And the discommunication that, you know, Coach Taggart was saying, hey, this is the defense I want you to run, run it. And Coach Barnett being like, I'll do my best, but this isn't my defense. I don't have a lot of experience here.
This is not how I coach. Right?
Yeah, so that created a lot of issues for the Florida State defense. So, you know, I think Coach Fuller's going to do a really good job. I think he's assembled an excellent staff. You've got Odell Hagan still there, tons of experience. You've got Coach JP. He's coaching defensive ends and the special teams coordinator. He asked us to call him JP because he didn't want us to butcher his last name. And I surely would have if I had to say it on the air. You know, you've got a couple really young guys and Chris Marv at linebackers and TJ Rushing in the secondary. You know, both guys, you know, Marv was an all-SEC linebacker. Rushing played in the NFL for 5 years. There's a lot to like about this defensive staff, but what I think I'm going to like the most about it is that there's going to be one voice. You know, there's one idea, one plan, and that overall, I think that's something that I'm really excited about with this program, is that it's one voice.
Yeah.
Everybody is lined up behind Coach Norvell, and that wasn't the case, you know, under Coach Taggart. There was a lot of different voices, a lot of people trying to do different things. There's one voice, one plan, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how
that
plays out.
And Tom, that's probably where the whole five-year scenario comes into your mind. Yeah. It's just look at all of the moving parts and all the players and what it takes to get that all to come together. It doesn't happen in a few weeks.
So a couple of the wise men around town that I happen to know said, these guys, meaning the team, have no idea what's going to happen on January 5th because they're going to start the winter conditioning program, which I'm not sure they really emphasized the last several years.
Yeah.
And the reality is you really make a team in that program, part of the year. People don't know that. The other part of it is that Wayne is system language and teaching and tactics and strategy. So here's a new language, a new system, new tactics. They got to learn all that.
Yeah.
That takes it. These coaches have never coached together in the ACC in their lifetimes. They're now together. That takes
and
a year or
two. They have to get
to
know each other.
Oh, listen,
this
is a process.
Yep.
It's a process.
Right. Folks, we're going to have these guys come back as the season begins to unfold. And we do need to learn more about the whole strength coaching part of that. Folks, this is why we do what we do. Wayne McGahee with the Tallahassee Democrat, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me on, man.
As
appreciate
always, Tom Park, our good friend who brings a good deal of color to the whole discussion. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment here in Tallahassee, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.